com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pierre Lafon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And before we introduce our guest, a couple of notes. There is going to be a special concert on June 3rd at Hahn Hall. If you've never been to Hahn Hall at the Music Academy, it's really worth seeing, even if it were empty. But this night, June 3rd at 7:30, there's going to be a filming for a PBS special with Lucia Micarelli, who is a fantastic violinist and actually an actress. She starred in Treme on HBO. And because this is a television show, the tickets are basically nothing. The tickets are anywhere from $1 to $21. So it's a fantastic opportunity to go to the Music Academy and to see a musician, the quality of Lucia, who has been a featured soloist with Josh Groban and with Chris Bode and Barbara Streisand. So hopefully you'll put that down. That's June 30th at 7:30 at Hahn Hall. And also, AHA is having their annual estate sale, which is not the typical estate sale. It's all of the donors for this wonderful charity provide all kinds of really good stuff. And it's going to be on Saturday, June 3rd. So June 3rd is going to be a big day for everybody at 430 Hot Springs Road, which is the Peppers Estate. So plan on going to the estate sale in the morning, and then hopefully you'll be able to make Hahn Hall in the evening. So we're here today with Frank Rodriguez, who is a community organizer at CAUSE, the Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon. How y'all doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for coming. So CAUSE, C-A-U-S-E, is an organization that is really a combination of two, a Santa Barbara organization and a Ventura organization. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came together?
Yeah, back in 2001, there was a fight for a living wage that was really pushed throughout the state of California. And here in the Central Coast, two organizations really pushed that. CAUSE over in Ventura, which was more of a research think tank, and Pueblo that was here in East La Vista and Santa Barbara that was more of a community organizing, knocking door to door, having face-to-face conversations. So back in 2001, both of these organizations sprung up, and they joined forces back not too long ago, like in 2013.
And what, you know, we talk about a living wage as if it's a term of art, but it depends on where you live, doesn't it? What is how do we define a living wage?
Well, back then, the living wage was really trying to make sure that we're addressing that people were able to afford where they lived. Like if we're talking about how much you pay for rent, you should be not paying more than 30% of your monthly income going to how much you pay for rent. So I think, yeah, it does matter in what area you live in. But most importantly, I think the living wage was just really trying to push for increasing the wages that had been stagnant for so long and making sure that rent was going up. The prices of groceries was going up, and they just wanted to make sure that people's wages went up with that.
And so what is the result now? What do we have in Santa Barbara?
And so that campaign was back in 2001. I wasn't there for that. Those efforts. But what I do know is in terms of organizations, there's a very strong alliance that we have with labor unions, with community organizations that really focus on workers and making sure workers are protected. And it shows right now in our efforts to really protect farm workers, especially in North County and over in Oxnard and Ventura, a class of workers that are have historically been overlooked, and just last year really got the ability to get overtime pay in our state government. So that's a way that we're pushing it. So the way I do know that we see it in practice here in Santa Barbara County specifically is our coalition with labor partners and other community partners that really want to help families.
But we do have a livable wage, I thought, in Santa Barbara right now. Is that not true or true? Or
it might be true. I don't know the answer to that right now.
And I guess, I don't know if you want to comment on the other side of the argument, which is if you raise wages too high, the number of jobs will decline. Is that something that you have addressed, that sort of other side of the story?
We definitely hear that. We hear a lot of different things. But our point is that we have seen wages been stagnant for a very long time. We're excited that California is pushing for a $15 minimum wage. It's something that we were pushing here locally before that was even happening, and we kind of took a step back because the state kind of made that effort. But our whole point is that a working class needs to have a livable wage that they can survive in, and we know here in California it's very expensive to live in, and we need to make sure workers are getting paid their due part. So, yeah, we understand that there's an argument that says that if you pay workers too much, it's going to bring down jobs. But I feel that there's a lot of rhetoric that shows that there's the people up there, CEOs and others, are getting paid and have been getting these huge pay increases. So we're just trying to make it fair. And it's not an ideological argument. We just feel that workers need to get paid their due part.
There was an obituary a few days ago for a very famous economist who died this week, and he had written in 1950s a very important thesis that there would be a problem with jobs that couldn't be scaled up, that people who worked as, and he uses an example, concert pianists and doctors. He said, if you can't increase your productivity, you're going to fall behind. Whereas if you could work in a business where there was operating leverage, meaning that there would be some type of a way to increase the number of units of something you produced, you could do better. So what is the... Is there a movement or a focus here on not just the minimum wage, but also education? Because to the extent that you can educate people, they could not only become, you know, more resilient in this world, but also find better jobs than those that require minimum wage.
So, I'm trying to make sense of the line of conversation, but I feel, yeah, there's economic view and the way that that theory is going to play into this and saying, like, we'd rather focus on education so to make sure you have people that can get better jobs and not just be... I think that kind of line of talk speaks down to people who are doing our service economy, that are doing our hard labor working economy, especially in Santa Maria. We have a lot of farm workers, and I think just saying that they need to get better educated, and that should be the focus before making sure they get a livable wage, is kind of distracting from the point of the conversation that you started with, which is what is a living wage. And May 1st, we just had our celebration for International Workers' Day. A celebration, we had a people meet in front of De La Guerra Plaza because they were celebrating that in 1886 there was a fight where labor really said, we want to make sure we have an 8-hour workday, that we have that we get paid a living wage, and that we don't have child labor laws and stuff like that. Oh, we don't have the exploitation of children working in these laws. So I think the point that I'm trying to make there is that we support labor because we really think that workers need to have a contract in which they can negotiate the wages that they're going to be able to work under, the working conditions they're going to be working under. And so I don't want to distract from that, from our service economy should be getting paid a living wage, and we shouldn't just focus on they have to be higher educated to get a living wage.
No, I didn't say that. I agree with you that, you know, that people should be able to have health care, they should be able to live and thrive. But I also believe that as part of helping everyone have an opportunity that I had, you know, 50 years ago, is to make sure that they have an opportunity to become educated and therefore to be able to get better jobs. You know, when I was growing up, the whole idea was to get a better job than your parents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I taught at City College for 12 years, and I saw an incredible movement where people were, you know, first-generation students that are now, you know, doctors and scientists that had no idea they could do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking that education should be one of the, you know, sort of the pillars of any effort to really help, you know, people that don't have the same opportunity that we've had. Given the political climate, is your fight much more difficult now? Because there's, you know, sort of an element of, you know, we care about ourselves and nobody else, you know, permeating not mm-hmm. just this country, but other countries as well.
So, yeah, just to finish up that last point, yes, education is extremely important, and we will defend it and help it, especially with our youth within our elementary schools, junior highs, high schools, and people going to higher education. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of push on that. So just to say we're on the same team on that one. But yeah, I think the political climate has been very interesting since as of late. Our organization definitely focuses on the rights of immigrants. And so the rhetoric that has been spoken at a national level is something that has created a lot of fear. And I just came with talking with the school board, and really people are fearful of going to talk about getting services, talking to police departments about issues coming about. So there's a lot of fear happening with community members are still part of our community.
Yeah, we'll pick up on that after the break. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
More than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here with Frank Rodriguez, a community organizer at CAUSE, the Central Coast Alliance, United for a Sustainable Economy. And we're talking about some of the fear that has been manifested because of the current political climate. Does your organization get involved? Like, how do you deal with a kid that comes home from school unable to do their homework because they're scared that their parents won't be home? Is there a sort of a ways, you know, AHA tries to do what they can, but are the things that you're trying to get involved with also?
Yeah, so we do our focus is doing organizing, getting face-to-face contact, and getting people involved, especially getting in front of city council, their supervisors, to voice their not only their opinions, but ideas of how do we improve this situation. Specifically with the issue of immigration and the fears that have been going around, one thing we started was this text alert system called Alerta. So if someone texts Alerta, which in English, it's Spanish for alert, to 24587, what that does is someone can get alerted of what is the presence of ICE here in Santa Barbara County, and ICE being the Immigration Customs Enforcement. So there's no way we can say ICE is going to be here, ICE is going to be there, but what we can do is clarify rumors of what's going on. So this is in collaboration with the Santa Barbara Police Department, with Salud Carbajal's office, because as their federal representative, he's the one that can actually have conversations with ICE. And ICE opens up and tells us what they're doing. They don't hide anything. So that way we can clarify. So there was rumors that people were picked up in Winchell's over in the east side, over by Cottage Hospital. And there was a lot of fears that were going around. So this is a way that we're trying to calm those fears by really just informing people what really is going on.
That's great. The fact that we live in Santa Barbara should ameliorate some of this concern. I just can imagine what it must be like if you live in a place that's not a sanctuary city or not as enlightened as Santa Barbara, where the police actually help ICE. Here, as I understand it, the police are not cooperating. And
correct.
And that would make, I would imagine, people feel safer. You know, I just can't understand some people. I come from a background where, ancestors of mine were rounded up in Germany, and no one did anything about it. And, I just think that, history again is repeating itself, and there's such a sense of mean-spiritedness in some circles, and it's just very disturbing. So we talked about living wage. We talked about education, and we'll get back to that. But what about other political initiatives you have? You're dealing with a whole host of things like housing, and housing is really an important element. It's right up there with food, I guess. How are we doing as a community?
So we 2 years ago, so the way we work, we have community leaders from the east side and west side, mostly immigrant moms, that started voicing that the biggest issue they were facing, especially in the lower west side, was evictions, unjust evictions. The latest issue we were dealing with was with Ivy Apartments, IVY, so not in East La Vista, but here in the west side. And so they would target these older apartments that were predominantly Latino inhabitants, and they would just evict everybody, paint up the apartment, and raise rents by $2,000. By $1,000.
Who did they rent it to, though? How did they get the rent up? Who did they rent it to?
Well, they're still renting it out. They're still in the process of evicting everybody from their apartments. And so what we kind of went up to city council and said, like, this is, at the end of the day, all we can say is this is messed up. This is not what we should be seeing in our communities, of especially most of these families had children in the K-12 system. And places like Berkeley have laws that say that you can't evict somebody that has children in the K-12 system during the school year. So most of these families were not mad that they were evicted. It's just the way that you just get a 60-day notice of eviction, which is how we don't have any ordinance that asks to do it otherwise. And they don't have to have a reason. So what we're asking city councils to kind of look at other cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, and 13 other cities in total here in California that have something called the Just Cause Ordinance. And what that basically says is you have to have a reason to evict somebody. And if there is no reason, especially an unjust reason of eviction, especially discriminatory practices, that they should be given a relocation assistance. And especially here in Santa Barbara, where the vacancy rate is below 0.5%, it's really important so we don't lose family members that move to Lompoc, Ventura, or out of the state because they can't find nowhere to live.
Is a legitimate reason to raise? Is the legitimate reason to evict raising rents? In other words, can you raise the rents by double the rent and say that's a legitimate reason?
There's no limit on raising of rents. You would either have to have rent control like Santa Monica, or you would have rent stabilization like Los Angeles. And they passed those laws back in 1978 and 1984 when we had a housing crisis back then as well. And what we saw is a lot of the metro areas that stood up and fought for their rights, especially as tenants, got a lot of those rights that we see in Los Angeles, San Francisco, but in the Central Coast, not as much. There was something that we rallied around back in 2008 after an eviction here in unincorporated Santa Barbara on Modoc Road.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happened as in Ivy Apartments. There was 38 families evicted, Latino families, right during El Día de Guadalupe, which is December 12th, a very important celebration for especially the Mexican immigrant population. And so everyone understood that was messed up. So the county supervisors reacted and passed Ordinance 4444, which protects against condo conversions, which is a type of just cause ordinance. So there's something in practice in the county, and there's some stuff in the city, but that's an example of how people can be protected through an ordinance.
Let me put a plug in for one of our sponsors, Habitat for Humanity, who, you know, does in a very small way, but it's still a way, provide housing and also gives people a sense of what it's like to own. And it's been very successful, and if more people would donate, they could even provide more housing. And one of the things that Habitat's able to do is because it's such a good and well-respected organization, it's able to get through some of the zoning and some of the regulatory issues. You know, it's tough to build in this community, and they seem to have a better record of getting approvals. So hopefully our listeners will support Habitat for Humanity. Let's just switch topics now to something probably equally as important as wages and housing, which is healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And how are the working class people in this community going to be affected if the healthcare plan that Trump has put that the House of Representatives passed, which would eliminate a lot of the Medicaid payments, would that have a really serious effect on health and healthcare for the working class in this community?
Yeah, definitely it would. We're also very involved with the Santa Barbara Progressive Coalition, a group that's been meeting at Casa La Raza Mondays and Saturdays twice a month. In Santa Barbara Progressive, you can find their information online. And there's a group that's really talking about how do we make sure that we kind of protect the healthcare that we do have. And yes, we do feel that what Trump has proposed would definitely it would be disastrous to a lot of people to have access to proper health care. So we feel just like housing, just like other, just like education, health should be a right that everyone should have access to. We know it's complicated, but hopefully we can get somewhere to have people have that representation.
What's amazing to me is that people who don't care about health care don't really focus on the fact that we live in one planet. So if somebody has the virus and can't go to the hospital, but they go to work as a food worker, let's say, and then they prepare your food, you're going to get sick. So it's even if you don't care about people, it's sort of ironic that there's this disregard for other people's health when they're not isolated. We all live together. And the other side of it is, you know, the idea that, you know, we shouldn't care about the very low-paying labor jobs when there may not be the ability to put fruit on your table because there's not enough people willing to do it. Anyway, that's my lecture for the day. Let's take a break. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro.
where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. We're here with Frank Rodriguez, community organizer for CAUSE, the Central Coast Alliance, United for a Sustainable Economy. Let's step back a second and talk a little bit about you, which is usually our guest's favorite subjects. Are you a native of California?
Yeah, I'm native of Santa Barbara.
And you went to school here?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Carter's Hospital. Grew up in the east side. My first memory was we were living behind Winchell's, and I would walk over to Franklin Elementary. Then I moved over to Punta Gorda and Voluntario, still in the lower east side. Went to Cleveland to finish my primary school. Moved over closer to the unincorporated area and started going to La Colina Junior High. Then I went to Bishop Garcia Diego High School. Since junior high, I was working at the country club, La Cumbre Country Club, and members there sponsored me to go to Bishop High School. So I went 4 years there, and then I went to UCLA after.
What's your major in there?
I did Chicano-Chicana Studies and Political Science, mm-hmm. and minored in Labor and Workplace Studies and Civic Engagement. Mm-hmm. So definitely focused on labor. So I ended up working in policy and labor and elections over in Los Angeles for the next 10 years after graduating UCLA.
And started working at CAUSE right after you got out of graduate school, or?
Yeah, so after working in LA for almost a decade, I went to go do my master's at UT Austin in Latin American Studies, really focused on the history of the Southwest from LA all the way to Austin and San Antonio. Went to go visit my pops over in Jalisco, Mexico for a little bit, so was glad to see family over there, and then came back and started working with CAUSE around a year ago.
And I think I know the answer to this question, but what spurred your interest in this whole field? Your studies or your family background?
It was definitely my family background. Grew up, I was in ESL, even though I was born here, I was in ESL till third grade. This is because I just grew up in a community that we just spoke Spanish. And so especially in Santa Barbara, where you see a lot of divides in different ways, not only in class and wealth, but also in just in communities, that really hit me hard, especially working at the country club and then going back to live in our apartment. You just saw disparities. And I think that really politicized me. So when I went to UCLA, I really got into helping organize and help community members that when I would look at them, I would see my mom and my dad. So I think it's something that really connected me with this was just the whole idea of people really fighting for equality, and that's something that I always wanted to be behind.
The last school board superintendent and the current one both have been on the show and have said that their most important hope for their tenures would be to have education in our schools integrated that there would be no disparities, that mm-hmm. people would be able to work together and people would understand each other. Is that happening?
I mean, I would love that to happen. I think that's something at least to strive for. It's awesome. I mean, we live in a microcosm here in Santa Barbara, a little island. We know we got the mountains and the ocean, and we have little funnels to go to North mm-hmm. County or go to Ventura County. So I think we have the ability to, I don't want to use the word experiment, but to really test ways of improving the education. I mean, we have so many different elementary schools, but also a lot of private elementary schools, but then they all funnel into Santa Barbara Junior High, Santa Barbara High School, San Marcos. So in these high schools, we see a lot of diversity in the populations, in the student population. So I think that striving for that and making sure that we're making sure that everybody, let them go to La Cuesta or let them go to Santa Barbara High School. Everybody should be having that equal opportunity. And I think what Santa Barbara City College is doing with providing 2 free years of education is ideal, and that's something I'm very proud of, being from Santa Barbara. I think that's a great starting point, and I know you taught there for a while, so I think that's a great starting point and really pushing our youth to stay local for those 2 years and then go out. I think that would have helped me out a lot. I went straight to Los Angeles, but having that local context learning how we can give back to that community context, I think is awesome. So I'm really happy to hear that the superintendents were saying that.
And what do you see, whether it's in Santa Barbara or in other places, I hear anecdotal evidence, not necessarily in Santa Barbara, of because of the behavior of some of our politicians and some of the rhetoric about immigrants, there's more bullying that takes place in the high schools regarding race. And is that something that A, you see, and B, you work on, that is an increase because of the political climate in just bad behavior?
I've been in a few spaces where I've definitely heard about that. From our leaders, from our parents, we've definitely heard that there's a lot of more just casual jokes that people hear and come back home having heard, or people yelling stuff while they were driving. There's something that we were just reacting to in our text alert system that we heard from, that people are getting yelled at while they're driving around. So I think there's a lot of great collaborations that we've done. So this is a very dark time in terms of these stories, but I think it's also a kind of bright spot where we're working with a lot of even service providers and really coming together and talk about how do we get people to really take advantage of this. And the sheriffs and the police department are also involved because they want people to talk about issues that are happening at home, people that criminal activity that's going on, and people to tell those stories and not be afraid to tell those stories. So we have heard about that, and so the way we are reacting to it is organizing with service providers and other community organizations to try to help out. But at the end of the day, it's some people are being emboldened and empowered to speak in this way because of kind of national rhetoric.
And there are people I know, in I've heard in the news in Los Angeles at least, where they're afraid to report violent crimes like rape or spousal abuse, yeah, because they don't want their name to pop up. And that's something that was really unfortunate because it perpetuates behavior that is not good for anyone. Mm-hmm. Do you find it ironic that we have this very tough immigration policy with the Mexican border, when the whole focus on the other side of the table is about extreme Muslim behavior? It's sort of like, hello, if we want to stop ISIS, let's stop, Mexicans from coming through the border. There seems to be a disconnect there. How do you deal with sort of that kind of logic?
I'm as someone who loves to read, and someone who went to graduate school, I just love to learn. And the reason I went to Latin American studies, I wanted to focus on learning the history. So there's a few books I would love to plug in. One is Kerry McWilliams' Southern California, Island on the Land. And the second one being Mike Davis' book, City of Quartz. Both of them really write a complex history of what Southern California has been. And I think it debunks a lot of these myths and stories that are made of Mexico. Stories that kind of perpetuate this idea that Mexicans are not as smart. They're not as up to par as American culture. And I think that's what these books really kind of try to point out, where a lot of these myths have kind of been built out of. And a lot of these stories that we hear today kind of have repeated themselves. We had Prop 187 in the early 90s, where Pete Wilson was using the same rhetoric, which is the state governor of California, using the same rhetoric that Trump is using to embolden the population to vote and win his reelection when his numbers were low. So, and that back then they were saying people who are undocumented didn't have access to schools, to hospitals, and that was found unconstitutional. So this rhetoric has been here before, and so I feel like a lot of the Mexican American community is just trying to live here, and not we haven't caused too much trouble. So I think it's it's an interesting part that I hope people just look at the history of what it's been.
You know, I found one of the things I found so interesting about my trip last week to Mexico City is when I looked out the hotel window, every, not most, every office building had an American name on it. New York mm-hmm. Life, mm-hmm. Chubb Insurance Company, Citibank. It's like we do more business down there. Mm-hmm. So this whole notion that, you know, the Mexicans are stealing business from us. What about the fact that every office building has on the top of it an American name? But anyway, what do I know? You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Deckers Brands, the parent company of global lifestyle footwear brands UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Anu, invite you to experience their new brand showcase firsthand in Goleta. Discover new product, try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand, and get a peek into the company's headquarters. The brand showcase is open for business Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta. See you out there.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. We're here with Frank Rodriguez, a community organizer for CAUSE, the Central Coast Alliance, United for a Sustainable Economy. So is your family first generation? Do you have family here in Mexico?
Yeah.
In Santa Barbara?
Yeah, my mom is still here. My dad was here also. He worked at the country club for almost 3 decades. Over 3 decades. But he decided to move back. A lot of my family is back over there. We had family that were deported before, and so that's why a lot of my family members moved back, is to be with them over in Degollado, Jalisco, which is right in the border with Michoacán. It's an area I love to go visit family. So I love being from both sides. And so I definitely consider myself a Mexican-American. But yeah, I have some family here, but a lot of them are here and also all over the United States, actually.
Could you have any anecdotes about how you your organization has helped people directly? Mm-hmm. Any good stories that you can share with us?
So our organization hasn't focused on service providing. So we feel there's a lot of great organizations, Importa, here in Santa Barbara that provides legal services to immigrants. But our focus has always been on organizing and changing policy, changing laws. So actually this Monday we took a bus full, almost 100 people, from Ventura and Santa Barbara County to go lobby at Immigrant Lobby Day in Sacramento. Left at midnight, came back at midnight, so it was a full day event. But we want to go lobby on 2 bills that are really going to help the immigrant community here in California, kind of going the opposite way of what's going on in Texas, where, like you mentioned earlier, Senate Bill 4 over there gave the ability for police officers to ask questions that ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, can ask. And that's, we're going in the other direction here in California, especially where a lot of our legislative body in the state government is the children of immigrants, De Leon, Becerra. So that's how we kind of do our work. Also, get out the vote. We know a lot of political parties like to get out the vote, and they go for the high potential voters. But the people we go for are low potential voters, people that usually don't go out, and especially the Latino community. And so some successes have been like that ordinance 4444 that passed in the county to help with housing. We are having a big fight with the development of a new power plant in Oxnard. And so that's a huge focus we have. And then we've been pushing for Farm Worker Bill of Rights. We just had the California state government it's going to take 4 years to implement, but people who are farm workers are finally going to get overtime. Two of the workforces that usually don't get overtime is domestic workers and farm workers. Just historically, that's been the jobs that have been for immigrant workforces and before for slaves. So it's been very looked down upon, those jobs. So we're really trying to make sure here in California we treat those workers right. So that in every way we're working on helping working families. But as you can see, we are multifaceted and we work on so many different issues.
Did you have trouble getting some people to go on the bus with you because they were afraid of their immigration status?
Yeah, and there's actually a lot of people that were they have the idea that, oh, you're going to have all these immigrants around together. But it's kind of hard to tell them that actually when you're engaged in this type of activity, you're very protected. When you're out in front of the state capitol in the West Mall in Sacramento, that is probably the last place that immigration is going to come at, and especially because it's going to be looked at in a very bad light. ICE definitely tries to keep their image up. They're not going to go into schools. They're not going to go into places where it would just create a bad image. But at the end of the day, that you can tell somebody that, but there was still some fear. So there were some family members that were like, we want to go, but I'm just so fearful. So I couldn't talk them to going.
So cause has really two focuses. One is political and one is on, I don't call it services, but on specific things like, helping, helping the community in a non-political way, in an educational way. So you have two different ways to donate. One is a political donation and one is a tax-deductible donation. Can you talk a little bit about that? If you want to help the organization, how would you go about doing that? How would you choose what? Yeah. What?
Well, you can visit our website at causenow.org. So cause is that and all the information is there on the website. I was just trying to distinguish. We're also a C4 that gets involved in electoral work, and that one is a lot more complicated to talk about. So I'll probably shy away from that one. But our C3, which is just a nonprofit that focuses really on regional issues. Mm-hmm. So if you look at our office in Santa Maria, we're focusing on Farm Worker Bill of Rights. We're focusing on pollutions and the pesticides that are used near high schools and making sure that doesn't disturb the health of the youth there. One great success that they had actually in Santa Maria and in Oxnard is the youth got the school boards to make it mandatory for people to or have the opportunity to register to vote at the end and the beginning of each school year for the seniors during their government courses. And so that's a way to really get students engaged. And so here in Santa Barbara, we're next to the coast, we don't have as much of that pesticides and the power plants. We focus more on tenant rights and immigrant rights. And in Oxnard and Santa Paula and Ventura, again, it's more the farm worker and the power plant issues.
You talked about getting out the vote. The numbers I've seen show that the Hispanic vote in 2016 was slightly less than it was in 2012. I find that to be astounding. Did that surprise you?
Yeah. I mean, I think there was in the general election, the numbers were low overall for not just Latinos, but every it was one of the lowest turnouts that we've seen in a while. I think that's that is extremely interesting. I mean, it's just how the dominoes fell. And there was a heated debate on the Democrat side. There was a heated debate on the Republican side. And I think people, I don't know if we're fed up or whatever it was, but I think there was a lack of voter turnout. And we saw the same thing over in France. I think there was a low voter turnout as well at the end. Mm-hmm. And so that's very interesting. And I wish I was still in my master's mode and I could just focus on reading and really looking at the numbers. But yeah, I think that's going to be very interesting. And I bet there's some students here at UCSB and throughout the world that are really having fun looking at the numbers.
So we just came through and we're not even finished yet with a drought. And that affects everyone. Is that one of the focuses of your group, dealing with the drought?
There is in Santa Paula, there's a huge focus on the river. And so it's more on what pesticides and stuff get into the river. Mm-hmm. But still, I think the drought is something that every one of our members, I think, knows about. Everyone really talks about. I always think of my mom. She yells at me whenever I go and how I wash the dishes, because my mom is really a big proponent of saving water. And so she says, I use too much water when I wash the dishes. She says, I'm not doing it right. So, I mean, there definitely is a lot of concern, it's not something we rally around. But if people have creative ideas of how we can kind of rally people to help with this drought, I think it's more, we need more rain.
Okay. Now, what about nutrition? You know, there's double subject here. One is, you know, I don't understand how kids can learn if they're not, they don't have lunch. Mm-hmm. They don't have breakfast. Mm-hmm. So there's food in general, and then there's, you know, specific food. And, you know, Michelle Obama said 2 days ago she can't understand how the government could decide that it's okay now to serve lousy food. Mm. So those two issues, is that a focus of yours? Availability of food and the kind of food.
Yeah, we're actually working on, for this summer, we want to make sure people take advantage of the free breakfast and lunch that are going to be provided throughout the summer at different locations, especially at elementary schools. I know it's going to be at the Boys and Girls, both Boys and Girls Club. Have a full list of what that's going on. And so we're going to go canvas community members to really take advantage of that. And the other part is there's some paperwork that people have to turn in to get free and reduced lunches, and that has to pass a certain threshold of a certain percentage of the school needs to turn it in. And so I know this last academic year, a lot of schools didn't reach that plateau or reach that number. And so there was a lot of funding that was missed in our local schools to be able to provide better lunches. And this affects everybody, because there's lunches that can be taken advantage by anybody that goes to that school. And so here in Santa Barbara, we do have a large immigrant population. And so we do qualify for a lot of those numbers, just as Santa Maria and Ventura and Oxnard do. So I think that's one way in which we're helping on that, is making sure people turn in those free and reduced lunch paperwork, so our schools can take advantage and make sure our students are properly fed, because, yeah, you need that nutrition. I remember I didn't have food when I took my SAT, and I remember I suffered.
How about your score?
My score was okay. I got into UCLA, but I remember I was suffering.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. We've been talking with Frank Rodriguez, a community organizer for CAUSE, the Central Coast Alliance, United for a Sustainable Economy. What are we doing about transportation? I have a car. I get around. What if you don't have a car? What if your parents don't have a car? How do we have affordable, we look at the cost of a bus, but if you don't have any money, it's not attainable. Are there efforts to make transportation available to everybody?
We're actually going to go in front of the we're going to be at the county office tomorrow lobbying for more funding to be put into public transit and really to listen to community input. So there's a few of our members that are going to go talk on, say, what spots and what they feel they need in terms of to be better transit riders. But I think the focus is going to be especially for North County over in Santa Maria. So we have the Clean Air Express and different buses. And I think we always overlook Santa Maria and we feel like we're just always focusing on the roads, but we need to really focus on transit. So we're actually going to be lobbying on that tomorrow at 9:30 in the morning. And so, yeah, our public transportation is a huge focus of ours. I rode my bicycle over here today. I'm a big proponent of different modes of transportation, not just getting in on a car, even though I need it as a community organizer where I have to be everywhere. But, yeah, our members, a lot of our members take the bus, ride the bus. And here in Santa Barbara, I do like the system here. I've been using it since I was in elementary school. My favorite bus line is the number 7. But yeah, I think that there's different opportunities that we go into city council or county government to really lobby for better transit here in Santa Barbara.
What's the best part of your job?
My best part, I think, is just the conversations I get to have, especially with community members. And as of late, it's been a lot of people are coming not out of the woodwork, but I mean, are just getting empowered to really react. A lot of people say resist what's going on in the national level. So we feel health is being attacked. We feel environment's being attacked. Everyone is really being emboldened. And so with the Santa Barbara Progressive Coalition, we see more than 100 plus people coming to these meetings and different ideas of how to really do this work. So I feel I came in a time where I can really myself be empowered and seeing that in a community I grew up in. Where we definitely want to make sure we protect all those who are part of that community and not let the a rhetoric of hate really penetrate into our society.
The talk is that Trump has helped the progressives more than anything in the last 50 years by making people much more aware. So based on that last answer, you sound like you're ready for politics. Am I going to be voting for you one day?
Well, I'm very much love to be in the back of the scene. So I did a lot of electoral work over in Los Angeles and Orange County, helping people get elected. And that's the type of work I like to do. I like to do the GIS work. I love to learn. So maybe in the future, but right now I love organizing and I love staying low key.
Now, see, that was a political answer. Now I'm even
I'm even
more convinced that you're gonna be running for office, and I hope you do, Frank Rodriguez from CAUSE, the Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy. Go check out their website. Frank, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for all you do. And we'll be back here next week for another edition of AHA Presents About Education.